Warning, this podcast talks about murder, sometimes in graphic detail, and is intended for mature audiences only. Welcome to Innocence Lost, Kids Who Kill. I'm Nicole, the host of this podcast, and here we will be talking about children who, for one reason or another, will lose their innocence and become adults when making the choice to end a life. Most of the cases that I will cover do involve children under the age of 15 and will detail much of the murders. So my sources for today's episode include an article from floridatoday.com, buzzfeednews.com, thedailymail.com, and WTSP.com. And I'm going to apologize a while. If you hear my son coughing, he literally just got over having a cold. So I just wanted to throw that in there that you might occasionally hear him coughing in the background. Still got to be a mom, but want to put this podcast out a while. On this week's episode, I will be following a young lady by the name of Catherine Nicole Jones. And she was born on June 6th of 1985 to mother Stacy Parks and father Curtis Jones Sr. And a year later, in May of 1986, little brother Curtis Jones Jr. would follow. And the family would move to Florida, and her parents would eventually get married, but there was already abuse happening in the family prior to the children being born. Their father was abusive to their mother, and their mother would leave and go back to her family and be forced to leave the children with their father. And at the time that they committed the murders, Catherine would be 13 years old, and Curtis would have been 12. And they would end up killing their dad's girlfriend, 29-year-old Nicole Sprites, in a murder plot that involved the girlfriend, the father of the children, and the unnamed family member who was the reason they were being abused. Now, the reason the family member remains unnamed is because he was never charged with anything, so they couldn't release his name. So the ball would begin rolling towards the murders around September of 1998, when Catherine ran away from home. Now, according to DCFS documents, they were around the same time informed through the middle school that one of the teachers suspected that Catherine was being abused at home. And the investigators did, in fact, find indicators of physical abuse. And when asked, Catherine ended up denying anything because her father intimidated her into lying and saying that she was not molested. So that just shows what kind of parents were in this household. And it comes to me that if there were indicators, why weren't the children removed from the home? And that's one of the things that bothers me so much, is that DCFS really had the opportunity to get the children out of the home and remove them from the situation that they were in, but they didn't. However, DCFS did in fact tell her father that the family member definitely should not be living in their house or even be in their house because he was a convicted sex offender. Now, in a little bit that I can find in regards to the abuse that was happening to the kids, it would go back to 1996, where Curtis Jr. would go to school with a bruised and swollen eye. And again, DCFS did not remove the children, allowed them to stay in the situation that they were in, and really didn't do what they're supposed to do. And another thing that comes out is little Catherine was telling her father what was going on, and her father wouldn't listen and chose the relative and believed the relative and thought the children were making it up. And it just seems like the kids were definitely in situations that they shouldn't have been in. So it would come back that nobody, according to Catherine, believed what was going on, except her 12-year-old brother. And one morning, Curtis would admit he too was being abused by the family member. So at this point, this is when the plot would start to unfold. So they started to plan to get themselves out of the situation that they were in, and their plan was to kill the ones who were allowing the abuse to happen. Now, she, again, they had planned to kill dad's girlfriend, the dad, and the unnamed family member. So, again, where I have issues with how things are done in regards to children is if teachers are stating that they're seeing something and DCFS is just like, eh, we'll look into it, it makes zero sense to me why, even if she had said, you know, no, it didn't happen, look into it, because clearly there was a history of abuse with both kids and their mother. I mean, their mother had to escape being abused and had no choice but to leave the kids in the situations that they were in because she was afraid of him. And if she was afraid of him, then what were the kids being put through? You know, this was his flesh and blood, and he was allowing them to be abused. Well, I can't even say he was allowing them to be abused because he, too, was abusing these kids. And at the end of the day, the ones who are in charge of caring for the kids didn't. And it truly messes with my mind to see that they were asking for help and they didn't get it. And why? Why weren't they given the help that they should have been? And why was the Department of Children and Youth not doing what they're there to do, which is investigate and investigate thoroughly? So I can't wrap my head around it. And message me if you know situations like this. Like, there are so many kids out there that are saying they're being abused, and there's nothing being done. And it's only then, after something happens, that they want to say, oh, maybe we should have taken this seriously. Freaking take it seriously. Take it seriously now. Don't wait. Don't close your eye to a situation that you might see. And again, DCFS said that they seen situations where these kids were definitely being abused. So why? Why were they still in their father's care? So, they had planned the murders and were in a situation where it was now or never. And DCFS would go and, in fact, closed the investigation. So, on January 6th of 1999, Sprites was sitting at the kitchen table and was working on a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle, and the kids were sitting at the table with her. And Curtis had the gun. And the reason they did it is they knew the family member was coming over, and they were done with it. They needed out. And their dad ended up leaving, which is the reason he's still here, and the girlfriend was there with him. And Curtis Jr. had his dad's pistol in his lap. And they would go on to shoot her 4 times, shot at her 9 times, though. So 4 of the 9 bullets that they fired would end up hitting the girlfriend. And at this point, the kids were shaking. You know, they knew what they just did, and they would go on to drag Nicole Sprite's body to the bathtub, leaving a trail of blood behind, and they would go on to try to clean up from what they had done. Now, according to reports, they ran from one they ran to their friends' houses and would hide, because one of the parents of the friends would end up calling the police to report the murder. And the police found them in a wooded area near their home. They were found in the morning and at first claimed it was an accident. However, based on the fact that they had moved the victim, they attempted to clean up, and it was found in Catherine's journals, where they had been planning this, that there was no way that it was possibly an accident. And they ended a life that night. And DCFS, in my wholehearted opinion, is 100% at fault here. They seen the warning signs, they seen the red flags, and they continue to let the children stay in the home. Now, initially, when they were arrested, they were unsure how they were going to be charged. And they would end up being charged as adults with first-degree murder. Now, their lawyers would, in fact, work out a plea deal in which they would both plead guilty to second-degree murder and be sentenced to prison. Now, investigators would go on to say that Catherine had absolutely no remorse in the beginning to what she had done, and that she showed nothing to what had happened. And they would both be sentenced to 18 years in prison, and they would go on to be the youngest in Florida to be sentenced as adults with murder. Now, I have seen multiple interviews with Catherine as she has grown up, and she does say she regrets taking a life, but felt that it was the only way for them to escape the abuse and the living hell that they were in. And I don't disagree with that, because there were ways out. The parents should have been more open-minded to what the children were telling them. And DCFS definitely should have removed them kids at any point where they knew that there was red flags and definitely knew that there was proof of the abuse. So the fault in this falls solely on the ones who were the adults in the situation. These are babies, 13 and 12 years old. They were crying out for help and weren't getting it. and were having a hard time expressing to their own father what was going on to them with them because he wasn't believing them. And I'm sorry, as a parent, I'm gonna believe my child, and I'm gonna go through hell and fire to make sure my child is protected. So they were released in 2015 from prison, and they were thrown out into the world. And Catherine has repeatedly, said, she looks forward to doing things she never got to do, like driving and, wearing makeup and having a cell phone and all that. Because again, they were kids when they were sent to prison. They were 14 and 13 when they were sent to prison. And she has gone on to say she has to learn how to trust people again because the ones who were in charge of protecting them didn't. And things that were done to them should not have been done to them, and they should have been protected. And, they weren't. And they just weren't taken seriously, and they weren't helped. But at the end of the day, children and youth were aware of what was going on, and it comes down to they weren't being believed, and everything that was supposed to protect them didn't protect them, and they were babies. At the end of the day, they were babies, and they should have been protected by the adults that are supposed to protect them. And that comes back to, if you see something, please say something. And I cannot fathom that these kids were put out there and allowed to be thrown back into the abuse. Now, both Curtis and Catherine were sentenced again to 18 years in prison, and they are on probation for the rest of their lives. They will never be off probation. That's what they agreed to when they pleaded to the second degree murder plea. So now that you have heard about Catherine Nicole Jones and her little brother Curtis, I'm just gonna put it out there. If you see any kind of abuse, whether it's abuse at home, abuse at school, bullying, anything that could trigger a child into either murdering family members or classmates, school shootings, it all leads back to what they were going through. Now, am I saying that they should get away with what they did? Absolutely not. But as the adults in the lives of these children, we gotta be more vigilant and open-minded and looking for the issues that come with these kids. And at the end of the day, it's better to be wrong about something than to not say something and have been right. So again, see something, say something. Now, I'm going to apologize for there's a lot of repetitiveness in me saying that DCFS dropped the ball, and I'll apologize that it how to be repetitive, but it has to be. And it has to be because there are so many situations with children who are not being, having their cases looked into. And then when they decide they've had enough and they're going to take care of it themselves, then it's a problem. And that's not when it should be a problem. It should be a problem the minute that it's reported, whether it be to a teacher, to another adult figure. Say something. Please. Because at the end of the day, had somebody helped these kids, I don't think that they ever would have seen a prison cell. And I don't think that the girlfriend, Nicole, would have been murdered. And I truly believe had they been removed from the situation, lives wouldn't have been lost. And yeah, the murder victim, her life is permanently gone. But these two children, and yes, they were children at the time, had to do something heinous to get the attention that they were trying to get from DCFS and from their father. And I don't get it. I really don't get it. So I will be adding photos of the kids from when they were little and what they look like now. And I will be adding them to the Facebook page, Innocence Lost, Kids Who Kill, on Facebook. And join me there tonight, Monday, March 6th, and we will do a question and answer segment. And if you have any cases that you would like me to look into, please send me a message on the Facebook profile, and I will get with you, and we can discuss whatever you might want to see. And I hope that you have a beautiful day. And with that, I'm going to sign off. So I will see you in 2 weeks. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Innocence Lost Kids Who Kill podcast. I'm the host, Nicole, and I'm the creator and host of this podcast, and hope that you will rate and subscribe for the next episode. And until then, we will see you in 2 weeks.